Welcome, welcome, welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 415 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. And here at the Unpopular Podcast, I'm going through it, man. I truly, truly appreciate you guys. I really do. I'm going through it. Oh, man. I have to talk about it. I'm going to start this episode with it so I can get it over with, get all of my frustration, get all of my emotions out. Playoffs, March Madness, Stanley Cup playoff, any playoffs for any sport. A common trait that doesn't really get talked about a lot as to how you win and how to advance in said playoffs is the attention to details and the attention to moments. When you're playing an opponent, obviously you may be better than them, they may be better than you, but the advantages that you could or could not have is the attention to detail. And if you are attentive and you pay attention to detail and you capitalize on those details, on those moments, it gives you an advantage. That doesn't ultimately mean that you're always going to come out the victor, but it gives you the necessary edge that you need. Because quite as it's kept, when you get to March Madness, when you get to those playoffs and you advance past the first round, you maybe advance past the second round, the level of talent is closer than it would be in round one and round two.
What I'm saying is, because there isn't much of a talent gap, much once you get further in, let's just say March Madness, the attention to detail has to be stronger. I hear a lot of people talking to me. I get a lot of DMs and a lot of comments asking how I felt, obviously, watching North Carolina, who was my favorite team, lose in the Sweet 16 to Alabama. Now, people are obviously pointing out the fact that I did not have North Carolina winning at all. I had them essentially losing in the Final Four to UConn. And I'm going to say this. Just like I said that attention to details need to be prevalent in order to advance in March. March is not the time. Maybe in the middle of the season or the beginning of the season, you're able to suffer bad games collectively. But March is not the time when you can do that. And March is also the time when your best players have to be your best players. You see, when you get to, let's talk about the NBA playoffs for a second. One thing that doesn't get talked about a lot when we talk about successful playoff runs is the rotation shrinks. You have to be tight in what you're doing. You have to be tight in your rotations. You have to be tight in who you're playing and who's not playing. Because those minutes that somebody that may not be ready for that moment or may not be able to contribute like somebody else, those moments can be killers. and it could essentially lose you series, lose you games. That thought and that focus has to be even more heightened for March because it's one and done. So you see rotation shrink considerably. Maybe in the beginning of the season, the middle of the season, you're playing 10 people. Well, you can't do that. Or let me say this. It's not smart to do that in March Madness, in the tournament. So now you're playing maybe 5-6 people. Because those are the 6 people that gives you that advantage to win. Well, on the flip side, your best players have to be your best players. Yeah, you might have a game where one person or two people, you know, have an exceptional game. But gone are the days where you can just, like, that is not the time where you have a collective kumbaya moment and everyone just plays their part. No, 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 no. So don't hear me. All right. So a lot of people want to point to RJ Davis. RJ Davis, who is North Carolina's best player. He's been North Carolina's best player all year. He won the ACC Player of the Year. He went 4 for 20, 0 for 9 from 3, finished with 16 points. Most of those 16 points came from the free throw line. 8 of those 16 came from the free throw line. That obviously plays a part. You know what it is? This was a collective loss. That's the thing that I think brings, I'm not going to say brings solace because that's crazy. That's the thing that I can wrap my head around. This was a collective loss. It would be disingenuous and it would be wrong for you to put this loss on one person or one moment. This was a collective loss. This was a... North Carolina was outscored 10 points in the second quarter. Or second half, I'm sorry. And you can look at moments. Obviously, they lost by 2. They lost 89 to 87. You're going to look at the moment where, you know, Armando Bacot missed the dunk. They lost by 2. You're going to talk about the final moment when Jalen Withers takes an ill-advised 3-point shot with probably 67 seconds left in the game and 15 seconds left in the shot clock. Mind you, Jalen Withers has made 4 3-pointers this entire season. So when you're asking, damn, why is Jalen Withers so wide open? That's good scouting. If there's anybody on the floor that you want to leave open for 3, it is Jalen Withers. Because I'm almost sure Alabama didn't expect him to shoot the ball either, but hey. That definitely played a part in the loss. Obviously, RJ Davis shooting percentage. Herbert Davis has been an incredible coach. For North Carolina, he won, I think, the ACC Coach of the Year. His rotations were a little off to me. Like, why your best defensive players is Seth, or defensive guards, Seth Trimble and Elliot Cadeau. For some reason, they only play like 13 minutes. Elliot Cadeau, who was a starter, played 13 minutes, and Seth Trimble played 11. Again, man, it's the attention to detail. Now, I understand that, you know, the players that were going off wasn't, well, never mind. Because Sears had 18, Griffin had 19, Estra, boy. It's a tough moment. It's a tough day for North Carolina, man. What's even worse about this loss is that the path was easier for us. And when I say us, yes, I'm saying North Carolina. Now, I'm not saying that they would have just ultimately walked into the Elite Eight and beat Clemson, who just beat Arizona. But I much rather play Clemson, who North Carolina beat at least once this year. I'd rather play them than an Arizona team, which can catch fire at any moment. But and on top of that, man, I talked about this with the Baltimore Ravens. I'm not saying that North Carolina was good enough to ultimately win a national championship. I think when they're playing on all cylinders, when everyone's playing as good as they know they can play, they're definitely good enough to win a national championship. But as we obviously know, that doesn't ultimately always happen, and that's always not the case. But I did think that they had a good shot to win a national championship this year. And there's a lot of question marks now surrounding this team. I mean, Armando Bacot's gone. Is RJ Davis going to do his going to cash in his COVID year and come back? If he does cash in his COVID year, is he coming back to North Carolina? Is he transferring? Is he going? Is he done with oh, man? Then you got Harrison Ingram. They're saying that he could be a possible high second round pick. Do you want to come back to North Carolina? And you know, it's tough. Again, Cormac Ryan's gone. Jalen Withers, he could cash in his COVID year and come back. And then who's going to put their name in the transfer portal? Who can you get from the transfer portal? I think that you have a really good shot if Harrison Ingram and RJ Davis come back, but that's unlikely. What I'm saying is when you have these moments, just like I talked about with the Baltimore Ravens, when you have these moments, there are times when these moments don't come back. Now, I'm not saying that the Baltimore Ravens ultimately can't get back to the AFC Championship, but what I'm saying is it's going to be much tougher this year than it was this year. Same thing with North Carolina. Armando Bacot is statistically one of the best players North Carolina has ever had. He is not there anymore. Elliot Cadeau, he had, 16 points? 17 points? No, Cormac Ryan, I'm sorry. Cormac Ryan had 17 points. Looking down, there's not too many people on that bench scoring 17 points. Sucks, man. And you know what's it was even worse, man? What March also does is it exposes, not exposes, it shows you who you are. March is not the time to essentially kill bad habits. That should be created, or that should be done over time, over the course of the season. So when you get to March, you are a sharpened blade. You are the best that you can be. It's almost impossible to think that someone is going to essentially be a different player than they were the entire year. We saw that with Arizona and Clemson. Preferably Caleb Love. Caleb Love is a tough shot maker. I will say that. As someone that watched him at North Carolina for 2 years, he is a tough shot maker. And he is a player that can hit the big shot at the big moment, as we saw against Duke. But one thing Caleb Love also is a bad shot taker a lot of times. I always say this. If the shot doesn't go and it's a questionable shot, it's a bad shot. It's only a good shot if you make it. And he takes a lot of questionable shots. Well, when everyone else around you is hitting shots and you're winning games, that's cool. But when you need to tighten up and when you need really good shot selection because you're playing a good team, i.e. Clemson, some of those shots that you're used to taking, you can't take anymore because they put your team in a bind. Well, what do you know? That man took a one-legged three-point shot. Airball. The man, I think Caleb Love was like 0-for-9 as well from the three-point line. He had a terrible game. I think he had 3 turnovers, 2 assists against Clemson. That is a big reason why they lost, because their Pac-12 player of the year, their best player, was not able. What he's used to doing, he did. Going back to this North Carolina and Alabama game, RJ Davis is known for scoring at a high level. But one thing that, as a North Carolina fan, that you've seen time and time again is he can have these games where he goes 4-for-20. You just hope he doesn't have it in the biggest moments, which he did. So, oh boy. Congratulations to Alabama, making their first Elite Eight since 2004, I believe. And we'll just have to see what happens with North Carolina moving forward. You know, there's a lot of question marks surrounding the organization. So we'll see. We'll see. Speaking of a lot of question marks, let's talk about the Golden State Warriors for a second. I think the only reason why there's a bunch of question marks is because there's a sector of people, sector of fans, sector of news outlets that won't be honest with what we've seen all year. You see, opinions, thoughts can change once you get new information. And it would be smart of you, it would be smart of fans, it would be smart of people to adjust with the new information that you get. You see, going into the season, I understand, even with what we saw last year, I understand why you think that the quote-unquote Golden State dynasty is still alive. A lot of the key pieces that won an NBA championship in 2022 are still there. You still have a superstar in Steph Curry. You still have Klay Thompson. You still have Draymond Green. You still have Andrew Wiggins, who was the second best player in that entire playoffs. You have young pieces like Jonathan Kuminga, who's emerging. Moses Moody can give you big minutes. I understand why you think that, hey, they just won 2 years ago. They can win again. But again, it would behoove you to get new information and continue to stay the course on how you feel if that new information brings credence to change. And what I mean by that is, to watch what we've watched almost all year and still think that this Golden State Warriors team is a quote-unquote, that dynasty still lives on, would be foolish. No, I'm not saying that Golden State's bad. No, I'm not saying that Golden State doesn't still have Steph Curry. And that's what we're going to get into in a second. But to think that this team is still at that dynasty level, you obviously aren't being honest about what you've seen all year. You wouldn't be honest with the fact of Klay Thompson is diminishing. Draymond Green is diminishing. Andrew Wiggins, surprisingly, has diminished. There's too heavy of a workload on Steph Curry, who is, I think, 34, 35. And then you look at the landscape of the league. And that is what we'll talk about here. The question is, or the question that I want to talk about now is, will Golden State make the play-in? They are currently in the 10th spot, which is the last spot for the play-in, and you have the red-hot Houston Rockets on their tail. I think Houston's won 10 games as we speak, 10 games in a row. And Golden State is fighting for dear life to get into that playing spot. I'll first say congratulations to Adam Silverman. The play-in is one of the best things that has happened to the NBA in a while. Now, obviously, you probably wouldn't think that, like, oh, man, by trying to do a play-in, like this is... And this is elementary, this, that, and the third. But no, it brings credence. It brings urgency to a long regular season. And it brings a sense of desperation to teams. Because they're desperate into getting into the play-in, because that essentially means they have a shot of making the playoffs. And it, you know, a game that games that maybe wouldn't have mattered 2, 3, 4 years ago matter immensely now. Like a Golden State Warriors Orlando Magic game has an incredible amount of importance now than it would maybe 3, 4 years ago. So I think the play-in is one of the best things that has happened to the NBA. Shouts out to Adam Silver. But let's have an honest conversation about Golden State. Let's first start with Draymond Green, because I think that has been the loudest conversation over the past few days. Let me preface this by saying that Golden State needs damn near every single game. They, especially when you see how good the Rockets are playing, they need almost every single game. Now, there are some games where if they lose, like they lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves, you understand that. But the games that you need to win, like you need to win against Orlando, you need to win against, I think they play the Hornets next. These games are important. You need to win the gimmies. Just like I know that, just like almost everyone in the league knows that, the Golden State Warriors know that. The Golden State Warriors also know that the best chance they have at winning is when Draymond Green is on the floor. And his defense is still elite. His knowledge of the game is elite. So, and you see that with Golden State's record with and without Draymond Green. It is night and day different. However, as we've seen throughout his entire career, Draymond Green has a tough time keeping a level head in certain situations. And it has come back to bite him on a numerous amount of occasions, such as what the 2016 NBA Finals, which essentially lost Golden State a Finals, lost him a Finals MVP, and definitely has a which was arguably, well, inarguably the greatest regular season by a team in NBA history, now has an asterisk on it because they didn't seal the deal in the NBA Finals. That's just one occasion. Well, the conversation now is stemming around, obviously, the Orlando Magic game. Draymond Green got himself two technicals with, 4 minutes to go, 4 minutes into the game. So he essentially was ejected for the entire game. I talked about this before, and I've said, once you're an habitual line stepper, there are going to be times when you go over the edge. And there has been a multitude of times where Draymond Green has gone over the edge, whether that's with Jordan Poole, whether that's with ejections, whether that's with suspensions. He has gone over the edge a good amount of times. And I want to talk about leadership for a second. Leadership shows itself in a myriad of ways. There's not one way that you can show yourself as a leader. There's not one way that you can prove yourself to be a leader. It matriculates in a lot of different areas of the game. Well, to me, one area that it shows leadership is understanding your importance to a situation. Understanding your importance, whether there or not there, to a team, to a game, to a moment. And in my opinion, if you know how important you are, and it's very obvious to see how important Draymond Green is when you look at the wins with Draymond Green or the record that Golden State has with Draymond Green compared to the record they have without him. It's clear as day to see the importance that Draymond Green is to this team. Well, leadership, in my opinion, is knowing that and understanding I cannot jeopardize this team because my emotions are not where they're supposed to be. Look, I'm not saying that Draymond Green's a bad leader. I'm also not saying that Draymond Green is not a good player. What I'm saying is there has been too many times where Draymond Green let his emotions jeopardize the positioning of his team and jeopardize the outcome of his team's success. And what's worse is he's done this at the biggest moments and hasn't changed. So in that sense, I question how good of a leader is he? I'm not saying he's not a good leader, but leaders understand you can't put your team in a situation, especially when you're as important as he is. Which leads me to my other point. This is a huge year for Golden State. Because there's a lot of decisions that's going to be made this offseason, depending on what happens with this Golden State Warriors team. I think that there is a lot of question marks surrounding a lot of players on this team. I think there's, as we currently speak, if this team does not make the play-in, I think we have seen the end of Draymond Green and Klay Thompson in a Golden State Warriors jersey. And I'll say it like this. Everyone especially when they've played as many games as they played, when they have had an illustrious career as, say, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green has. When you've played as long as you played and played as many games as you played, everyone is a diminishing asset. LeBron James is a diminishing asset. Steph Curry is a diminishing asset. The question is, how fast of a diminishing asset are they? And obviously, Steph Curry isn't diminishing as fast as, say, a Klay Thompson. Now, why is that? Now, obviously, some of that is God-given talent. Steph Curry is just a better player than Klay Thompson. But a lot of that is what you've done beforehand. We started this episode with North Carolina losing to Alabama. And I talked about it's very hard to change what you've done an entire season, change that in the playoffs or change that in the tournament. It just doesn't, you can catch fire, but to change the makeup of your talent, change the makeup of, you know, how you approach the game, that doesn't really, it's almost impossible to do. You see, I look at Armando Bacot, and people ask me, is Armando Bacot an NBA talent, an NBA caliber player? And as much as I love North Carolina, and as much as that is my favorite team, as much as of an importance he has been to this team, I say no every time. And I don't say no because he doesn't have traits that bodes well for the NBA. I say no because Armando Bacot has been the same player since he got into North Carolina. He has not improved. Now, yes, he has gotten older. He might have gotten smarter in some areas. But skill-wise, he has not improved since he came into North Carolina. When he came into North Carolina, obviously he had players that were, you know, it was a rookie and everything, or a freshman. But he was still a rebounding machine. He was still a physical specimen as far as, you know, size and girth under the rim, and could get you double doubles with the, I mean, he has the most double doubles, I think, in D1 basketball history. But you ask why I think he, one of the most important times for an NBA player is the summer, when the season is over, because that's when you can really hone in on what you need to work on. And Armando Bacot doesn't seem like he's worked on anything that can translate to the NBA game. He doesn't have a jump shot. He's still inconsistent from the free throw line. He can't shoot a three, and that's today's NBA. And he's not as physically dominant as a Joel Embiid, as a, hell, as a Andre Drummond. So as much as I, this isn't me poo-pooing on Armando Bacot. I love Armando Bacot. He was a North Carolina great. So this isn't me crapping on him. This is me being honest. He is not an NBA talent because he did not work on what he needed to work on to get to the NBA. Let's bring this back to Golden State and Klay Thompson in particular. What does Klay Thompson do now? Or what new does Klay Thompson do? From his rookie year to now, Klay Thompson, what new has he brought? He still isn't that good of a dribbler. He still isn't that good of creating space. Yes, he's still a good shooter, but he was a good shooter his rookie year. He was a good shooter coming out of Washington State. What I'm saying is, you have to add to your game. If you don't, you're going to diminish faster than someone else, like a Steph Curry. When Steph Curry got into the league, he had ankle problems. He wasn't the best dribbler. He wasn't the best at shooting off the dribble. Yes, he was a good, he could do it, don't get me wrong, but he wasn't that good at it. When you look today, Steph Curry not only is one of the best shooters of all time off the dribble, he's one of the best dribblers of all time. Because he worked on it. What you do in the summer determines how fast you start diminishing. Again, LeBron James is a diminishing asset. He is still not the LeBron. He is not the LeBron James that played in Miami. He is not the LeBron James that played his early years in Cleveland. But he's still a great player because he continues to work on things. And obviously some of the God-given ability. Going back to this Golden State team, one of the biggest reasons why not only the dynasty's over, but I think that there has to be major changes moving forward is because a lot of the assets that they depend on are diminishing faster than they would like. Klay Thompson diminishing faster. Now, yes, I also understand that injuries play a big part in that. But again, that's another thing. When you have injuries, you want to lean on things that you can lean on. Well, Klay Thompson hasn't developed things that can translate after injury, i.e. a handle. So now, when you don't have the legs like you used to, now you have to use more arms and shoulders to shoot the ball. Don't get me wrong, he's still a great shooter, but now you see a lot of 1-for-9, 1-for-12 games. Which brings me back to Draymond Green. He sees this just like every single person that watches Golden State games sees this. So you have to be smarter. And he has shown that fieriness that got him where he's gotten him, that fieriness that makes him the player that he is, that fieriness that Golden State Warriors needs, but at times can hurt the Golden State Warriors, he does not have control over that. And it gets the best of him time and time again. And what's even worse about that is, I don't think there's anybody in the league that has more of a leash to say what they want to say because of their reputation than Draymond Green. I mean, I know Draymond Green has a reputation of, you know, hitting people and some questionable moves on the court and always arguing with the refs. And that essentially does hurt him, but it also gives him a rope to say what he says a lot of stuff to refs. Every single game. To answer the question directly, I think Golden State will make the play-in. I think that their road to the play-in is easier than, say, Houston Rockets, which is the team that is in the 11th spot right now. And on top of that, Golden State has a game or a game and a half ahead of them. Now, the most important game for Golden State is, I think, on Tuesday when they play, or Thursday. It's either Tuesday or Thursday when they play Houston. If they beat Houston, it's over with. I mean, at that point, you would have beaten them twice. I think you'll be two games above them. I think it's over with. But if they lose that game, that makes the rest of this puzzle, the rest of this season, incredibly important. So now you might have to beat a team that, like a Dallas Mavericks, that's a little tougher. So I do think that the Golden State Warriors will essentially make it into the play-in. Do I think that they'll make it out the play-in? I don't know. Because you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis in there. You have Luka Doncic in there. And there's a chance that you could have Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and the Phoenix Suns in there as well. That's going to be tough. Which is also interesting because, like, if you really think about it, there is a good chance that two of those teams, two of the top players in the league, will not be in the playoffs. Again, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker. Some of them players are not making the play or playoffs. And on top of that, if you want to, I think right now the Kings are in the play-in. That's De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, who has the most, I think, consecutive double-doubles in NBA history. So, again, it's going to be very interesting, but I just wanted to talk about what happened. Or the state, let's say that, the state of the Golden State Warriors. And kind of like the North Carolina Tar Heels, there's a lot that has, this whole season has shown, or how do I say this? Let me try to formulate what I want to say. There's a lot of factors that have gotten the Golden State Warriors where they are. Some of the Steve Kerr rotations and some of the Steve Kerr lineups. Obviously, the diminishing talents of a Klay Thompson, of a Andrew Wiggins. Draymond Green getting suspended multiple times this year. There's a lot of things that have put Golden State in this predicament. And because of that, it's almost asinine to think that this team... Do I think that they could win a championship? Maybe. I will say this. It is more... I would be shocked if this team won a championship again. And that doesn't take away from anything they've done. But what I've seen, unless they make a big swing or a big move, like they're able to get maybe a Paul George, I don't know. But this current team, no. Mm-mm. No. We talk about all the traits that make a NBA team or NBA champion a champion, and they don't have a lot of them. They have some. I mean, they have a superstar, but they don't have pieces that you can rely on to be like, hey, that's a championship caliber piece, you know? No. They only have one. And that's kind of the only reason why a lot of people still have faith in this Golden State Warriors team is because of that one piece, and that's Steph Curry. But as we see, even Steph Curry is getting worn down and tired. Not just with the season, but with Draymond Green's antics, because he understands, just like I understand, just like you probably understand, just like the world understands how important he is to this team. And this team has no shot of winning without Draymond Green. But Draymond Green's a pretty durable person. The only person, you know, obviously you don't wish injury upon anyone, but Draymond Green is the reason why he's missed a lot of games. It hasn't really been because of injury, to put that into perspective. But to be direct, yeah, I think Golden State will make the play-in. I just don't think that they make it out of the play-in. I think that they will, seeing that they're the 10th spot, they don't have wiggle room to lose. So I don't think that they'll make it out the play-in. And with them not making out the play-in, I'm sorry, it makes this offseason incredibly interesting. So we'll see. Let's move forward. On Thursday, we saw MLB's opening day. Obviously, it's the start of the regular season. And there's excitement everywhere. You know, it's MLB opening day. Like, who, you know, it's the opening day for the league, of course you're going to be excited. And you can go and you can talk about, you know, what team's doing what and what position, you know, power rankings and everything. To me, this is... It has to be a one-team race to the World Series. When you compile the talent and spend as much as the Dodgers have spent, getting a Shohei Ohtani, who is arguably the best player in the MLB, having Mookie Betts, who is arguably the best player in the MLB, having Freddie Freeman, who is arguably one of the best players in the MLB, the Dodgers have one of the most expensive yet talented rosters the MLB has ever seen. With that comes expectation. With that comes championship or bust label. That is the realm that you put yourselves in. Now, obviously, when you're the Dodgers, since you're a big market team, there's always going to be that expectation. But this year is now more than ever. You talk about colossal failures in sports. And we've talked about some. Like the Boston Bruins, last year, I think? Having one of the greatest regular seasons, if not the greatest regular season in NHL history, to get bounced, I think, out the first round by Florida. That was a monumental, colossal failure. Or we just talked about Golden State, 73-9, having the best regular season in NBA history. Coming back from 3-1 against the Oklahoma City Thunder and essentially losing in the NBA Finals after being up 3-1 to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Monumental failure, collapse, failure. I think the Mariners, too, had like one of the best seasons in MLB history, ultimately to lose. The Dodgers will find them, even if they have a bad season, they will find themselves in that realm because of the names that they have on this team and because of the money that they spent. You see, the history of the MLB is you spend the most money, you have the most talent, you have the best shot of winning the World Series. That's why the Yankees have so many World Series than everyone else, because early on, they had the YES Network and they had the most money to work with. That was the advantage of playing or being a New York Yankee. You knew that you probably had the best team because you probably could put the most money in. Well, as we speak today, that is the Dodgers. And don't get me wrong, I understand the Yankees are still good. You still have Aaron Judge. They have now Juan Soto. You still have Giancarlo Stanton, but for some reason, he continues to get football injuries and he plays baseball. I understand you have the Rangers, who won it last year. They're going to be good. You also have the Braves, who a lot of people think could be their year as well. They are a complete team. A lot of people have the Orioles. The Orioles had a surprise year last year. Now there are people legitimately picking the Orioles to win the World Series. And trust me, from a person from Maryland, not Baltimore, Maryland, but a person from Maryland, that's an odd thing to hear. People really have high expectations for the Orioles. The Orioles. But they have one of the best players in baseball as well. You have the Padres. They still have Manny Machado. They still have Fernando Tatis. And he's going to be able to play the entire season. It's outside of last year, which he was suspended the beginning of the season or most of the season. I understand that now more than ever, the talent pool of the MLB is crazy. Again, we didn't talk about the Braves having Ronald Acuna. We didn't talk about the Reds having, I forgot his name. Damn. Phillies have Bron Harper and Trey. Like, the Phillies are good. And the Phillies almost made the World Series last year. I get it. The talent around the MLB is more vast than it's probably ever been. That's honest. But when you spend as much as you spend, and you have three of the arguable top 10 players in the MLB currently, and on top of that, you have everything going on with Shohei Ohtani off the field. The last thing you want and the last thing that you can afford is to not win. I think this team is way past making it to the World Series. This team needs to win the World Series. That's how good they are on paper. But again, as we know, and as we say all the time, these games are not won on paper. But I know my Nationals ain't got a shot. I tell you that. Jesus, man. But yeah. You don't, and on top of that, the expectations are what they are, even for that ball club. You don't spend as much as you spend. You don't swing for the fences getting the big names that they got and not expect to win a World Series. This team is too good to be satisfied with making the World Series. No, you have to win it. Now, I understand that puts pressure on people, but pressure and sports go hand in hand, especially when you have extremely high expectations for yourself. Just saying. But yeah, man, I'm excited. Even though we all know I'm not the biggest MLB fan, but this year is going to be extremely interesting just when you look at the vast talent that's in baseball right now. Even some of the lower teams, like the Diamondbacks that just made the World Series last year, they're going to be extremely good. Yeah, it's going to be very fun watching the MLB this year. See what happens with the Mets. Can the Mets finally do something with Pete Alonso, you know? Or the Toronto Blue Jays with Vladimir Guerrero. Like, you know, I'm excited. As a person that doesn't really care much about baseball and doesn't really watch baseball, this season does have me excited. I will say that. Lastly, before we go, we have the unpopular topic of the day. Let me first put things into proper perspective before we move forward. What Ice Cube is, what Caitlin Clark is, and what the big three are businesses. Now, you're probably asking, how is Ice Cube and Caitlin Clark a business? Because their name generates revenue. Their name generates excitement. Their name alone can get them where they need to go. That's the position that they put themselves in, which is ultimately a business. Caitlin Clark has been the face of college basketball, men's and women's, all year. More people know Caitlin Clark and what she looks like, who she is, where she plays. More people in the United States know her than Zach Edey, who, in all intents and purposes, is going to be the player of the year this year. I can ask 10 people, like 10 random people on the street, which team Zach Edey plays for. And I'm almost sure, probably about six or seven of them probably either doesn't know who Zach Edey is or doesn't know the team he plays for. I'm almost sure I asked the same 10 people, who is Caitlin Clark? They know who she is. Which essentially means that she's pretty much, her name is a business. Same as Ice Cube, you know. We know Ice Cube is one of the pioneers in hip hop and rap music, and we know what he's done with NWA. We know that what he did with his own career. Hell, what he even did in the movie industry with Friday and Next Friday and Friday After Next and Boys in the Hood and a lot of the classics that he's been in. So Ice Cube's name is a business. Caitlin Clark's name is a business. And obviously, Ice Cube is the owner and creator of the Big Three, which has been a external basketball league that allows former players and players that may not be, you know, on the NBA level to play in a three-on-three type league. And Ice Cube sent an offer to Caitlin Clark, which was, let me add, this was leaked. So Ice Cube had no intentions of having this go out, but to the masses. But Ice Cube sent Caitlin Clark, who again is the face of college basketball, both men's and women's. If you want to argue, we can argue, but that has pretty much been the case. He sent Caitlin Clark a Big Three offer for $5 million. For her, obviously, to participate in the Big Three. Now, if you look at the schedule, the Big Three schedule compared to the schedule of the WNBA, she could do it. I think that there's going to be maybe 2 or 3 weeks where she'll have to double dutch and do both, but she could do it. Now, obviously, again, this was leaked, so we don't know the specific details of the offer, but I do know this: if she was offered $5 million, that is more than what she would probably make in her entire career in the WNBA. That is the truth. Now, the reason why I'm talking about this and the reason why that this was a thing is because it caused an uproar both with the WNBA community and with the NCAA community. And I think people, are missing the most important point of this. I hear a lot of people ask, well, you offered to Caitlin Clark, why not offer it to Angel Reese? Or why not offer it to any other WNBA player that is great, like a Breonna Stewart, like an Aja Wilson, like a Kelsey Plum, like, you know, Lexi Brown, like a Jewel Lloyd. And I don't know if people just don't want to say it out loud or people don't want to admit it, but Ice Cube didn't offer Caitlin Clark this promotion or this offer because of her basketball skills. He offered this because he knows the cachet. He knows the popularity that Caitlin Clark's name brings to any organization. And if you don't agree with me, name me two players that ever played for Iowa. On top of that, you see the Indiana Fever ticket prices are going up now that she's declared for the NBA or WNBA draft. Everyone knows how important or how popular and how much revenue is going to be generated off this woman's name, just like Ice Cube. I'll be real with you. As a person that loves basketball, basketball is my favorite sport. As a person that watches basketball almost every single, actually, watches basketball every single day, I completely forgot about the Big Three. I totally forgot that was even a thing. But you know, which would draw attention, draw revenue to the Big Three? Caitlin Clark. This is no disrespect to Caitlin Clark, but Caitlin Clark would not survive in the Big Three. It's not because she's not a good basketball player. It's not because, you know, women can't play with men. That's, no. It's because of the brand of basketball that the Big Three plays. Kenyon Martin and Gilbert Arenas, who both were a part of the Big Three, shouts out to them. They were on the Gilbert Arenas podcast, and they pretty much confirmed everything that we've seen. That is not a traditional brand of basketball that we watch with the Big Three. They play damn near jailhouse. So for people that don't understand what jailhouse is, they don't call too many fouls. It's incredibly aggressive and incredibly physical. And it's not the basketball that you would see the NBA or the WNBA or the college basketball. It's not that type of basketball. It's literally physical, rugged basketball that I don't think Caitlin Clark would survive. I don't think anybody, any woman would survive in it. No offense to, I'm not trying to be sexist. I'm not saying that women can't do. What I'm saying is the level of physicality isn't really basketball. And do I think that this offer was genuine? Yes. I think Ice Cube genuinely wants Caitlin Clark in the Big Three. But what I don't think is he wants Caitlin Clark in the Big Three because of her basketball skills. And I know he came out and pretty much said it, you know, she's able to take her talents and she's able to make more than, you know, what she would possibly make in the WNBA more than likely for her entire career. In that sense, cool. But that is kind of where I disagree with Ice Cube is saying, okay, well, if that's the case, if you're being honest about that, then I understand the frustration with former WNBA players and current WNBA players saying, yo, okay, if that's the case, why not offer Breonna Stewart? Or why not offer Asia Wilson, who is the best player in the WNBA right now? Why not also offer that to Kelsey Plum? Why not offer that to Sabrina Nadescu, who is the closest thing that we've seen to Caitlin Clark in a while? As far as basketball and how they play, they kind of play the same way. Again, you have to follow the actions, not the words. The words is what got Ice Cube messed up, because and that's the case. Your actions aren't really showing what your words are saying. Yes, I think Ice Cube generally wants Caitlin Clark in the big three. But he doesn't want her in the big three because of her talent. He wants her in the big three because of her name, her cachet, and the popularity that her name alone brings. Which means that her name, her popularity, will bring eyes to the big three. He's looking at this as a business. He's looking at this as a business opportunity. Not because she's a good player. So, yeah. There you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want a Unpopular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve joggers, the link is in the description below. Multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to get as many subscribers as possible. I truly appreciate everyone that's already subscribed. I think I'm at like 1.4K. So shouts out to everyone that subscribed. If you like the content, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe. You know, it definitely means a lot. Also, if you listen on the DSPs, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you listen, please subscribe. Please follow. I understand that some people only watch me on YouTube. Some people only listen to me on DSPs. All of you guys are important, and I truly, truly appreciate all. So if you do listen on the DS, please, please subscribe and tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe. Definitely means a lot. Also, follow the socials. Post pretty much daily. That is where you get me. You get content from me. You get, if you want to debate, if you want to go back and forth, follow Instagram, follow TikTok. That's probably the fastest way to get to me. And yeah, you know, it's a way to connect. So subscribe and not subscribe, follow the socials. Until next time, much love.